roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What is up, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty on a Monday. Anxious to talk MMA with you all. We have a lot to talk about. We have UFC's Holland versus Brunson card that we're going to talk about that took place this past Saturday. We'll go over some of the latest news like Khabib Nurmagomedov retiring officially from MMA. Kind of something he did 6 months ago, but I guess the UFC said, yeah, he did this time. So that had a big fallout. And we also have two guests for you. Randy Couture, the legend, the former UFC heavyweight and light heavyweight champion, current PFL color commentator. We're going to talk to him and kind of do a little bit of a catch-up, but also a big focus on the Randy Couture story, which debuted on ESPN this past Saturday. Now you can not only watch the first of four parts, meaning the one that occurred, but they're already available, all four of them, and I can't wait to binge watch them on ESPN+. So now that the first one aired, they're all available on ESPN+, and it's quality. It is very, very quality work that was done. They did a really great job with it. And like I say, I can't wait to binge watch them all now that I know they're all there sitting available and ready to go. We'll also talk to Myron Malotki. I want to make sure I don't say Malotki. It's Malotki. He is the president of XFC. XFC has a show on March 27th. It's called Young Guns One. And we're going to talk to him about that show that he's promoting out in Oklahoma. Fans are invited. And when I was perusing their website, it looks like they're selling some tickets, you know, so we'll talk to him about that. Can't be easy to be firing these shows up, you know, during the pandemic. I'm sure you got your restrictions and guidelines or whatever. But at the same time, one thing I noticed goes from being out at the Mandalay Bay for March Madness is people are just anxious to get out. They're anxious to start doing what they love, you know, and for me, it's sports in general. But if you are not only a sports fanatic, but specifically an MMA fanatic, all these shows are starting to open up with fans. So always go out, be careful, but enjoy it, you know, because we've been through a lot in 2020 and here we are ready to rock and roll. And we're ready to rock and roll. So buckle up, Junkie Nation. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Monday, March 22nd. Goes, the only way I would want to start by talking Holland Brunson would be if that had been a barn burner. It wasn't. And therefore, I want to start with Khabib Nurmagomedov and the UFC officially announcing duly that Khabib is officially retired. Khabib Nurmagomedov met with UFC President Dana White. They had one final dinner. And Dana White pretty much accepted that Khabib is done. And with that, now the title is vacant. And of course, if you follow MMA Junkie, which we tell you, you got to hit that refresh button on your browser every 30 minutes because stories are constantly going up, or get that free app on your tablet and smartphones. It's free again. If you check that out, there was a big fallout from that. So Khabib retires. 29-0, 13-0 overall, 13-0 in the UFC. And now the vacant title will be disputed by Charlie Olives. That's Charles Oliveira versus Michael Chandler. And if you can do the quick math, that probably leaves Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor to fight their trilogy out. And it's obvious now that that won't be for a title. So all of the dominoes have already started to spill out. Dariush versus Ferguson. That was done last week. Who's left? Your Gagey's, your Makhachev's, everybody else. But goes, react to the official announcement or whatever you want to call it of Khabib Nurmagomedov staying retired.
Well, I feel like I've reacted to it 5 or 6 times already. I mean, like, I don't know how many times people – Dana White was really the only one that wasn't reacting to it, right? I think everybody else already packed this thing up. It's been pretty obvious that the guy is just not going to come around because he's a special type of guy, man. There's not very many people out there like Khabib. So for him to really stick to his guns, that says a lot, man. It says a lot about his character. It says a lot about – where his thought process is, where his heart is. Not very many people say no to Dana White and the UFC, but Khabib did. And now going forward, you know, you're left with Charles Oliveira and Michael Chandler, which again, that's probably not the fight that should have happened, right? It should have been Dustin Poirier and Charles Oliveira, but that fight's not happening. And it's because Dustin Poirier chose the route of going Conor McGregor. That to me is a big problem. I know I think we've had this discussion off air, but we've also had it on air a few times, and I'm going to sound like a broken record, but I thought Dustin dropped the ball a little bit in that decision, but I also think the UFC dropped the ball in that decision. The UFC has to make it worth his while. The belt should be the ultimate gain in this organization, just like every other sport. You don't see the Los Angeles Lakers getting to the finals and then saying, you know, I think we're going to skip out because we'll probably make more money playing the Globetrotters. That doesn't happen, right? They want their titles. They want to hang that up from the rafters because it means so much. The UFC should have made it worth his while, unless he's asking for just ridiculous stuff. But I think he probably, if they told him you're going to make this much money with Conor McGregor, maybe you'll make a little less, but it's a title fight. I think he could have done it, you know, because you would win that title. It's something that Dustin's always talked about, winning it in that fashion. That would have made more sense to me, having him on the sideline. I think a lot of fans are going to tune in that night and go, wait a minute, what happened to Dustin Poirier? And there's just not a good enough explanation for that. So a lot of things happened in all that. And I'm glad that – I have nothing against Khabib. I love Khabib, and I love watching him fight. But I'm just kind of glad that now he's off to the side and we can start moving things forward.
Yeah. But I want you to clarify something. Are you saying the UFC dropped the ball and should have made Dustin versus McGregor for the title? Or just someone convinced Dustin to fight Oliveira or Chandler for the title?
Right. I mean, it should have been Oliveira. You know, they should have told him, Oliveira's your guy. That's for the title. We realize you're going to make more money with Conor McGregor, but we're going to try and make up for that on this end of the deal, because you got to put value behind that belt. The belt has to mean something. People can't just skip out on it like that. It's not a good look.
This is true. I'm just wondering what if the money was the same and he goes, man, I just love fighting Conor McGregor. That's what gets me up in the morning. Then it's off the UFC. It's back on Dustin. I mean, it's kind of on UFC and Dustin right now.
Mm-hmm.
This way it would be off the UFC and completely on Dustin if we knew the money was the same. And I don't know. Yeah, you're right. We've reacted a lot to this news, but I guess now it's official, and now we have the official title fight happening. And that told us that it would probably be, you know, Poirier versus McGregor in the other fight. And we've attacked this many times. I would have preferred Dustin in the title fight against either guy. I suppose you're right. Oliveira did more to earn his spot, especially when he got past Tony Ferguson. Then Chandler, who bested Dan Hooker, and that's a huge win too. But I think Oliveira's tenure with the UFC, the longer streak, and him having probably a slightly higher profile opponent in Ferguson probably would have gotten him the official nod. Gagey tweeted that he thought he was fighting Chandler for the title. And so I don't know. There was a lot of things, a lot of moving pieces there. And again, with your Makachevs, RDAs, Gagey's of the world, you know, I guess we'll have to figure out what's next. Somebody was telling me the other day, I think on Instagram or Twitter or YouTube, they should have had a tournament. And I'm like, man, I know. Like, the UFC should say, we don't do tournaments. We don't do Grand Prix. That's not us. Unless there's a vacant title, and you got the horses to do it, this should be a monster on ESPN, and they should do something with what Bellator does, you know, and throw out that $1 million prize or $1 million bonus or more if you want, whatever, and just stagger it. If you feel like 16 takes too long, then just do 8. 4 is kind of like, I don't like 4 too much, but I would rather take 4 than nothing. But
4 happens unofficially all the time anyway.
In a way. But look, just rewind. Oh, man, you're going to get me fired up. Just rewind to, like, this past January, when what I'd like to ask Khabib is, did you say that if one of these guys does something special, you would take a look? Because that sounds like bullshit now. You know, after hearing Khabib say, I was retired. I said I was retired. Like, welcome to October of 2020. So if he really did say it, then how are you not impressed with Chandler's debut and him taking out Dan Hooker as quick as he did? And then how are you not impressed with Dustin Poirier doing with McGregor what he did as well? Like, that, those were impressive wins. So if you said that and that didn't impress it, then why'd you say it? Were you – you know, Khabib doesn't drink. He can't even say, oh, I had a couple. I was trying to just get this bald fool off me. I don't know. I don't know how all this went down. But, you know, going back to what you were saying, even if we did have a four-man tournament, like UFC style, without calling it that, like having the official brackets where someone advances, you still fall into anything can happen, man, from one fight to the next. They can say this, they can say that, you know, and it doesn't work out. Do you remember when he said, Shogun versus Vera, Machida versus Bader. We're going to have these four fights.
On one night, right?
One that impresses me the most. The fight card was in L.A., and I can't remember which one it was, 103 or something like that. Whoever impresses me the most, I think, was going to get a title shot or something like that. And both of them kind of impressed, but he delivered. I think Lyoto starched Bader, and he got the title shot. So something like that, sure, when you say it, if you follow up on it, cool, you know. But when you still kind of leave that opening to whatever works best for your business, then just don't say it at all. I want official brackets. I want them walking down a ramp of a pay-per-view, and they announce it, and all 8 combatants come down with their ties and their suits, and there's fireworks, you know, like, just, I don't know. All that would be is something out of the norm until the next champion retires and the title's vacant. Like, I guess we can rewind and say, well, the last time that happened was when Triple C retired. So those are pretty too close together, you know, within the same year. But it doesn't happen that often, and I don't think it would disrupt things, and I think it would keep things a little fresh. Boxing went to, you know, Rumble in the Jungle one night. They had a Thriller in Manila. They have a stadium show from time to time. You know, why does UFC kind of have to be a little bit of the same, like when they have a chance to spice things up? They own those properties. They can't even go, well, we don't want to get confused with Pride. You own it now. You know, you own everything. So just bring it back. Bring it back when you go to Japan. Bring something back. Do something is what I'm saying.
Yeah, change it up. Let me ask you this, though. Look, Poirier and McGregor are 1-1. They can always revisit that fight. I don't understand why it has to happen right now.
Even if each guy loses, it would still be a great trilogy.
It's always going to be there. That paycheck will always be there, I feel like. Unless Conor's saying behind the scenes, I got one left in me and that's it, then all right, I understand that. But you're right. They could both lose and it would still be alive. One of them could lose. It'd still be alive. I don't understand why it has to happen right now.
Diaz and McGregor have both lost since they fought. And we still want to see that. Dana was more than willing to promote Nurmagomedov and Conor, even after Conor lost to Poirier. He still felt like it's a big one. So, yeah, you're right. Poirier versus McGregor can be a big one at any time. But in the meantime, let's do what really makes sense, and that's have your best fighters always competing for your title, you know? And like Ghost said, make it mean something. You guys got to figure that out. Because if you start having these little circus shows, like what the soccer teams are trying to do out there, hey, Bayern Munich, Manchester United, Barca, let's have a super league between us. Dude, you're just doing it for you know, maybe more money or whatever. Like, I don't know. I think the Champions League format is fine, and And I think you can just do it that way. Come on, man. We've set up some really nice roots in almost every sport. And this one's got a great curve that where we don't have to wait 100 years for it to be a sport that already, you know, pops. It's been popping for the last 20 years, man. And we're ready to go. We're ready to continue, you know, watching it, promoting it, talking about it, everything. But you got to have your best fighters fighting in those titles. I remember boxing. Was it De La Hoya? One of those guys said, I don't want to pay the sanctioning fees, so I'm just going to do my own fights versus this guy and that guy. And God bless them. Some of them worked it out, but boxing should find ways to react to that and figure it out so those belts do mean something.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, Habib, honestly, we wish you the best. You were a beast. One key thing he said when I heard him talk to Megan Alevi was he didn't want to put his mom through it. So, you know, she must be one of those that took those fights like to heart, like, you know what I mean? And who knows if she thought, hey, because without asking Habib, we don't know. Hey, I've already lost my husband. I'd hate to lose you. You know, I mean, maybe she thinks they're so, these battles are so vicious that, you know, maybe somebody could die or him being away for so long. You're now the man, you know, in the Nurmagomedov family. We need you here, not out training and traveling and this and that. And he says he's got the money. He's got projects. He wants to spend more time with his kids. So you can't hate on that. And, you know, and then, of course, there's your head trauma concerns as well. Now that said, Mrs. Nurmagomedov, your son was a beast. He rarely got hit in the head, and you know, the sport is pretty safe. But we have to respect your wishes.
Yeah,
the dad seemed like a very, very charming fellow. I'm sure she's the same. So let's not hate on a guy that left a little bit early. Sometimes when they hang out too long, we're like, they should have done it years ago, you know. And here we are, kind of like a perfect scenario, and it'll just have to be that. And plus, nothing says he can't ever come back, right? Look at Triple C's already teasing it. So in a year or two, he could come back, maybe go for 30-0, or maybe go for a few more title defenses. I don't know. But, yeah, it's a wrap. We'll be taking him off, you know, officially all the rankings now with USA Today Sports and MMA Junkie. And that goes for lightweight and pound for pound. So we'll see. And as far as Oliveira and Chandler, hey, have a great one, man. Have a great fight. We'll see what happens. I imagine the winner of Poirier and McGregor will be hard for them to not put them into a title shot. Yeah, even McGregor, because the UFC will push him at any time. He would be coming off two losses in a row. No, he beat Cowboy, sorry. So he would be 1-3 in his last – sorry. He'd be 2-2 in his last four fights if he could beat Poirier, because he will have beaten Poirier and Cowboy and lost to Poirier and Nurmagomedov. But I think that'd be good enough for the UFC to say he gets the winner of Oliveira versus Chandler. So we'll see. Gagey's, Makhachev's, all those other guys, they're just going to probably have to wait a little bit. And that's that. All right. Kevin Holland versus Derek Brunson. This past weekend, we had this fight card here in Las Vegas. It was called UFC on ESPN 21. The fights were on ESPN 2 and then ESPN. So that was a good opportunity for the UFC to shine a little bit. Unfortunately, they were going up against March Madness on True and TBS and CBS and all that. And March Madness as well on the ESPN channels. But hopefully we did get some eyeballs. Here are the results. Bruno Gustavo da Silva defeated JP Bay. Montel Jackson defeated Jesse Strader. Trevin Giles defeated Roman Delizzi. Grant Dawson defeated Leonardo Santos. Macy Chasson defeated Marion Renault. Tai Tuivasa defeated Harry Hunsucker. Adrian Yanez defeated Gustavo Lopez. Montserrat Ruiz defeated Cheyenne Bay. Max Griffin defeated Song Kanon. Derek Brunson defeated Kevin Holland. The bonuses went the way of four performance bonuses of the night. There was no fight of the night. Max Griffin versus Adrian Yanez was, those two got performance bonuses along with Grant Dawson and Bruno Gustavo da Silva. Those will start at the top. Brunson versus Holland. What did you think of the fight? What did you think of Holland's antics throughout the fight and even maybe post-fight?
Man, I love Kevin Holland, but I cannot come to his defense in this fight. I mean, Derek Brunson's a tough out. Derek Brunson, and I don't want to disrespect Derek Brunson. I mean, I think he would admit this. The UFC is not in the Derek Brunson business. When you see Derek Brunson on the other side of a matchup, I don't think they want him to win. I honestly don't. I think this was set up for Kevin Holland to beat Derek Brunson. They made a mistake, though. And I think these mistakes are going to come more often. And I think it's because we were rushing fighters through the pandemic to get out there, that some of these fighters that have done well in this time period maybe lack a little bit of the skills to compete at the very top. And I think we saw that in the way that Derek Brunson was getting these takedowns and Kevin Holland was just not getting up. We saw Cheyenne Bays also was put in the same position every round, and she just could not, she had no answer for it. I think some of this inexperience is starting to come out, and you can't see that in a main event and a co-main event on a UFC card. It's not a good look for your promotion. Kevin Holland, I don't know what he was thinking. I mean, I get it. I think he went out and he said something like, I'm not looking for a title, I'm just looking to have fun. But that's not what everybody else is really looking at. Like, there are people that are gambling on this fight, all right? I watched this fight at Mandalay Bay. There were people that were irate. They had a lot of money on this fight because they thought they were backing a fighter that wanted to be there and wanted to get a victory in this fight. And he was just taking this lightly, like it was a pickup game of basketball or something. You're just messing around, farting around. That's just not.
He didn't even want to win those.
Yeah, it just wasn't right. And so he's going to pay the cost for that with the fans, with the organization. I mean, I don't think they're going to rush him into any big fights anytime soon. Dana was already kind of not feeling him early on. Then I think he started to buy into him a little bit. But now I think he's probably pissed off again. So none of this could possibly be good for him. I think you got to give props to Derek Brunson. That dude, he'll always come out. He'll give you an honest fight. He's made a couple mistakes that have cost him. But really, if you can erase some of them little mistakes he's made, that dude would have pretty quality wins, some good matchups. But it just hasn't happened. And I hope Derek gets the respect he deserves because he went out and he put on a good show.
Yep. You covered a few things here, so let me chime in. Brandon Fitzgerald said it on Saturday. He showed up to he was on a business trip, Derek Brunson. You could even tell post-fight he was like, you know, I'm here to win, and these antics were what they were. He said this, he said that. He wasn't even processing it because he was there to compete. And, you know, so one guy was on a business trip and the other guy was on a field trip. Secondly, I think Kevin Holland could still talk, still have fun, but compete. Like, we're not saying you can't do all those. I think he's done them in other fights and been able to pull it off. But this time, I think his talking and his smiling was probably his way of dealing with, he was in the process of just having no answers, getting his ass kicked. And you work so hard in 2020 to become one of these prize fighters that the UFC wants to have on a stage, such as, you know, you having your own main event and then, you know, continuing to move on. So, yeah, look, what if you just look at it from the standpoint of your win bonus is tied to this, you know, financially trying to compete and win be beneficial for you, you know, and you can tell by Kevin's lifestyle, he likes some nice things, you know, and guess what? The UFC will reward you with bigger paydays if you compete, you know, and go out there and you just have to offer more than what I saw on Saturday. Things weren't going your way and that's fine, but I don't know. He combined with some low fighter IQ moves, you know, like the last thing you needed to do was just get your legs up and just the hands were working. But every time he got a hold of your legs or just got a hold of you, you know, you were going down and you had no answers for it. So, you know, knees and kicks and some of the things he was doing were very, very, very questionable because he had opportunities every time a round ended, they would start upright, you know, and That was his chance to shine, and he's more worried about a high five and a glove touch, and I don't know, man. It was really, really frustrating. I was one of those people at Mandalay Bay that was irate because I had him tied some parlays. And then another thing you said is right. They must not like Derek Brunson, because I remember he was a Whitaker test, or let me say it this way. He was a test for Whitaker, a test for Adesanya. And then remember Shabazian recently, too. He was supposed to be the next big guy, and Brunson shut him down, and now he shut down Holland. So, you know, on some occasions it's worked out, others he hasn't, but he's always gone out there and tried to compete. I would say the Izzy fight was the only one that was just kind of too, one, you know, very, very one way. Because even in the Whitaker fight, I remember he hurt Whitaker.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to his Strikeforce days, man, if you look, that guy's fought everybody, Derek Brunson. You got to tip your hat to that guy. You know, much respect to him. And with Kevin Holland, you know, I think Dana had already dangled a little opportunity, like a lifeline, when he said, I think he had a mental breakdown. If Kevin Holland had seen that, or the people around them had seen that, I think that was his way of just saying, it just wasn't my night, and move forward. But to continue to push that narrative of having fun and talking, man, the fans ain't trying to hear that. They're not trying to hear that. We want to cheer for you. We want to bet on you. We want to watch you. We want to cover you, whatever. But, you know, when the time comes, you got to do your job, you know, same way you would ask the same of everybody else, you know, that's attached to the sport. You want the ref to do the best job, the judges to do the best job, the media to do a good job covering you, fans to be fans. You know, a lot of athletes are like, you guys boo. Well, they're fans, and sometimes they're going to boo and sometimes they're going to cheer. So do your part. You know, you got awesome skills, Kevin Holland. You really do have some great skills. And I love the fact that you enjoy the sport, but just turn off a little bit of that, you know, at some point, and go out there and try and win these fights. And maybe this will be a learning lesson. I don't know. But I really hope the guy bounces back, because he's always been a fun guy to cover in the sport. And I'm just amazed at how comfortable he's out there in this type of combat. You know, it's like he's a day at the park for him. It's very enjoyable for him to get in a fight. It's really no big deal. And you see, like GSP, for example, how he talked about every fight and all the fears he had going into every single one of his matches.
Yeah, and the other thing about Kevin Holland is, if you watch the fight, he still had gas in the tank at the end. It's not even that he didn't have the cardio. He just didn't have the skills. Derek Brunson just found his weakness and exploited it. And that's maybe has been a little bit of a criticism of Derek before in the past, is that sometimes he just doesn't capitalize on certain things. He did in this fight, and Kevin Holland just let him do it over and over, and that's what was just so mind-boggling. Was I can understand that all that happened. What I can't understand is how you can be happy and smiling at the same time.
I agree. Elsewhere on the card, because I think we're going to be joined by our guest soon, Max Griffin, man, he starts Song Kanan and Montserrat Ruiz versus Cheyenne Baez. That was something else, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was another fight where just there was no adjustments being made in that fight. I didn't really understand it too well. And that girl's
headlock was actually winning her every single round. And Ryan Bay could not get out of that damn thing. You know, it was just a bully choke. But Montserrat stuck to it. And so she had, you know, the duration of the round. Not too much damage. She would punch her a little bit, but she had the dominance and the duration. So that's why she was able to just nick these rounds. But when they stood, Cheyenne Bay hit her pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we'll get back to some of these fights here that took place on Saturday night. But right now we want to get to our first guest, Randy Couture, the legend himself, former UFC heavyweight and light heavyweight champion, current PFL commentator. Of course, you know the PFL is going to be firing things up on April 23rd. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Randy Couture story, which debuted on ESPN this past week. And now all four parts are available on ESPN Plus. And then we'll get an update as well on his health. Now he's down there in Arizona, goes, that ranch is badass. And we'll be right back with Randy Couture. What's going on, Randy Couture? How are you?
Good. How are you guys? Good to see you, fellas.
Yeah, good to see you too. Man, what a beautiful ranch you have down there in Arizona. So that's where the retirement officially is taking place then.
Yeah, basically, yes.
Yeah.
I had an amazing place in Colorado, but it was just so hard to get to. And so, you know, as weird as 2020 was, I was able to sell the Colorado property in February and then picked up this Arizona property in July. So we've been spending a lot more time in Arizona lately.
Yeah. So I wanted to tie it to first thing, how's your health? We know you had that ATV accident. We heard it was in Arizona. So we thought maybe it was a vacation, but apparently it was on this ranch of yours. But can you update us on your health, please?
Yeah, everything's good. Shoulders 100%. I did 4 or 5 rounds a couple weeks ago with some of the guys. So health is good. The heart's doing well. You know, still on the thinner, so I bruise a little easier. The guys think that's funny. They want to put bruises on your ass, but it's all good.
Yeah, seems like every year you're giving us a health scare there, but you're indestructible. You know, MMA couldn't do it to you, so we know we're stuck with you for the next 20 years, and we're happy to be the hand that we're dealt, because we love Randy Couture. You've done so much for the sport, and now ESPN has done, because it's now available on ESPN Plus, the 4-part series there, the Randy Couture story. Tell me, what did you think of the way it was done? Because you obviously are part of it, so you saw a lot of the filming. I mean, just 2-3 minutes in, you can tell, oh, okay, this thing's like really, really well done. You know, it is no joke. They did a great job.
Yeah. You know, the PFL produced this piece. They asked me a year ago, you know, obviously with canceling their 2020 season, they started a production company. They were trying to keep their name out there. And with the production company, asked if I'd be willing to step up and do a 4-part series. And I'm like, of course, that's amazing. Obviously, they went all the way back to my high school days. Talked to a few of my friends there. My mom went to Oklahoma, talked to some of my teammates and coaches there. They just did an amazing job. So I'm very excited. I got a lot of positive feedback when this started airing on ESPN. I haven't seen, honestly. I haven't had a chance to watch any of the episodes yet. So I've been working on a film. I just finished last night. So I haven't got a chance to watch it myself.
You're going to love it. There's already appearances by, like you said, John Smith, Chuck Liddell, Jay Glazer, Chris Pratt. So, yeah, I loved it. And not only did they go back to your high school days, I found something out that kind of made sense when your mom was sharing the fact that as a toddler, you were headbutting billy goats. And because you know why? I was thinking as they were showing, like, you know, they were warming things up and what you did and wrestling. And then they just showed the pose down with you and Tim Sylvia, and he's towering over you and he sticks out his arm. So he's got the height, the reach, and you're just smiling back like nothing. And so as all this is playing out and, you know, part one's getting going, I'm like, I wonder if Randy, like, because you had no fear. I wonder if he had a screw loose and he's just really not been able to, like, show it off to us, because you're so grounded, you speak so well, and you've always conducted yourself as a true professional. But is this guy a nut or what? The goat headbutting explained it all to me right then and there.
Yeah, well, yeah, I got into some trouble for I mean, that's what happens. You leave a kid with goats, you're gonna end up headbutting goats. I don't know. I did get in a lot of trouble as a kid. You know, my stepdad picked me up from the babysitter with the goats. And back then, car seats and all that stuff wasn't that big a deal. We all survived that. So I'm standing on the back seat, looking over the front seat out the front window of the car. And I just decided it was a good idea to headbutt my stepdad in the back of the head. I don't think he appreciated that much. So yeah, me and goats have a long history.
Yeah, that was a really funny story. And folks, again, on ESPN Plus, 4 parts of the Randy Couture story are available for you to binge watch. It is very well done by the PFL Studios. I highly encourage you all to check it out. All right, Goz, what do you have for the legend, Randy Couture?
Well, I was pretty shocked, because when you think about it, George, we've spent half of our lives covering him. and we've been around him. So I figured I knew everything. I've read his book, but I probably knew about 50% of what happened in this documentary. Like, I'm watching it and I'm like, I didn't know that. It was over and over. So I was wondering, Randy, at this point, like, how much of this story has been written? Like, are there things that can still happen in your life that would completely shock you? Are there still goals that we don't know about?
I think you're always trying to improve, always trying to learn more about yourself, be a better person, be a better contributing member of this society. You know, obviously the biggest thing I've been focused on has been acting and getting better at that, that career choice and that opportunity. It's been a pretty good year for that. I've got involved in producing, just finished two films back to back. Nice to be back to work, honestly, because I didn't do anything almost in 2020. So excited to be back and see the PFL back and fired up and get back to commentating some fights for them. And then, you know, the acting has been going pretty well. So having a good time exploring this whole thing. It's not something I ever saw myself doing, acting. I was never into drama or any of that stuff. So learning more about this business and becoming more proficient at it has been very fun.
You know, George is a pretty good actor as well. He's one of the best, and anything he puts his mind to, he's pretty much succeeds at it. See, I'm a good actor too. Anyway, what I wanted to talk about was kind of this theme, and it has to do with your life, because they do touch on it on the documentary a little bit, but they always bill you as this underdog. And I don't understand that, because I don't understand how you can be an underdog over and over and over and that people not catch on to that. But I was wondering about your mindset. Had things been different after one of your first biggest achievements, if you started to go in as this favorite into everything, would it have not been as much fun? Would it have changed your mindset? Would it have felt different not to be that underdog?
I don't know. I think I think there's something liberating about being in that underdog position. I think those times I was expected to win, those times where I felt that pressure from external forces for me to succeed or win, it was a lot harder to deal with. You know, when people don't have any expectation of you, they don't expect you to win, they don't expect you to succeed in those situations, that's very liberating. I can go out and do exactly what I trained to do and prepared to do, and I don't have to worry about, that's one less thing that you have to deal with. And so I seemed to flourish in those circumstances where nobody thought I was going to win. Nobody thought I could pull it off. And it's hard to say. You know, I know there were times, certainly in college, where I was a number one ranked guy going into big matches or going into the national tournament and managed to come up short. And I think, again, those times I came up short prepared me for later down the road when it was going to count more. I mean, you never know what's more, right? I mean, would have loved to have won a NCAA championship, got to the finals twice and managed to fail twice. So, again, everything turns out the way it's supposed to turn out. I don't know. There's no other way to explain it.
You might not know this, but unofficially, I feel like I've been Extreme Couture's mascot for the last 5 years. But I'm willing to pass that over. I think Extreme Couture's mascot should be the goat. Because think about it. You got goats now. You grew up with goats.
We need to go with a logo, don't we?
Yeah, just cross the horns or something. And I think the goat would totally work out. But I do want to ask you a little bit about PFL here. PFL, you come across so much talent, so many different fighters, different weight classes. You've been around so many people throughout your life and just about every aspect of your life. You're kind of competing. Can you look at these athletes now and can you almost pinpoint who's got it and who doesn't?
I mean, you still get surprised. So guys step up, you know. A perfect example is David Michaud. You know, watched him in the first season. He's certainly a game competitor. Maybe not as refined as some of the other guys, but he's a workhorse. He gets out there and just gets after it. So, yeah, David Michaud is one of those perfect examples of a guy that nobody knew. You know, I'd never seen him compete, and I was impressed with his demeanor. He showed heart, but not a lot of success in the first season. And then the second season, just stepped up and kind of came into his own. Nathan Schulte is another one. No one ever heard of him before. And now he's a two-time champ and just does an amazing job of implementing his judo mindset into his MMA game. And it's a blast to watch. It's really cool. So you'd like to say, yes, you could pick them all and you know which one's got it. Certainly there was no doubt in my mind that Kayla Harrison was going to be successful. Was the real question was how long was it going to take? And as diligent as she was, the training partners and her seeking the knowledge of wanting to implement and become a well-rounded mixed martial artist has been a blast to watch. That's certainly one you could point at. Look, Clarissa Shields. I'm excited to see what this gal does. Here's a two-time champ in boxing. How much MMA, and I know she's training with Holly Holm, with Winkle John down in Albuquerque. I mean, she's going to be amazing to see how she unfolds. And now we're headed towards that classic matchup, the judoka gold medalist and the boxing gold medalist. I mean, who doesn't mm-hmm. want to see that? I want to see that. So there's a lot of potential in a lot of these guys. This sport has become the global phenomena and the combative sport for this generation. And I think we're seeing and enjoying that now.
Is that where strikers have a slight advantage in the sense of grapplers usually want to test their hands against the strikers more than strikers say, I really want to roll with that grappler. You know what I mean? Like, and if you think about it, that was one of the first things that was being addressed in the Randy Couture story was the grappler, you actually outgunning Chuck Liddell, the striker.
I think that sometimes you have to be careful because your ego can get in the way, right? You yeah. want to go prove something, and sometimes that can be your undoing. I'm thankful that I was always within myself enough to know when I needed to step across and try and strike with somebody. Chuck was one of those guys. I had to make friends with the potential that he was going to knock me the hell out and try to beat him to the punch to take him out of his game, to not let him settle into that rhythm he was always so good at finding. So you have to weigh that out, everybody's different. We're all wired different. And that's what makes this sport so unique and so interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And then another thing that was going through my head was, when they're showing the highlights and they're showing you when you first started, and then they're showing now what you do for the PFL and the PFL, they're showing those $1 million checks that the champs get, And then I'm thinking, if I'm not mistaken, you were part of the era where I think if you won a tournament, $50,000 was the prize. And I was watching it going, wow, what a difference. And I think you've answered this question before. You don't seem to harbor ill feelings to the young athletes that are making more money. But here's the thing, Randy. You also gifted your son the business that you built. And I think about 10, 15 years ago, a lot of people portrayed, I'm going to just be direct, when Dana White and you kind of butted heads, he seemed to think that you maybe were maybe too obsessed with the money part of it or whatever. But here I could think of two different instances that I'm watching in these highlights, and I'm thinking, man, or actually the Ryan Couture part was in there. It was a thought that was going through my head where the money was really not a motivator. It was just you as a competitor. Can you maybe explain that a little bit further and especially for the newer fans that maybe never got all of your side of the story?
Well, certainly I think that Dana and the UFC were upset that I had exposed kind of the backdoor way they were controlling fighters and paying fighters with these independent contracts and stuff. And when I did the presser, had to have my own presser and kind of expose some of that. They weren't very happy with me. They tried to make me out to be a greedy athlete, that somebody that just was all about the money. And frankly, I wrestled for most of my life for free because I love the sport, and I would do the same in MMA. I think there's a lot of us that would. Obviously, we savor the opportunity to be a professional athlete in our society. You show me another athletic endeavor in our country where 13 to 15% of the revenues that come in from those events go to the athletes. There isn't one, and that's the case in our sport. The ancillary rights, that was the big issue and the big thing we butted heads over when Zuffa bought the company from SEG and they wanted to re-sign me to a new contract with all these ancillary rights. is 17 pages of stuff that's in these contracts. And I, you know, fortunately for me, I'd been educated by new management, battle management. Jeremy Lappin, Peter Levin had just signed me and a bunch of other big names in the sport. And they, you know, they're from Hollywood. They knew what those ancillary rights and what those clauses and all this stuff in these contracts meant. I'll be honest, I didn't know what a lot of that stuff was. Those guys educated me. And we went to bat with the company to change some of the language and some of the things in those contracts. And I think that's why I'm persona non grata with those guys to this day. It is what it is. Until we as fighters unite and come together and recognize that we're the commodity, without us, there is no show, and demand some minimum standards in pay and treatment in 401ks or retirements and medical and all this other stuff that a lot of other athletes, professional athletes in our society enjoy, then we're stuck in this situation. We're going to continue to be taken advantage of. Am I happy I got into this sport? Absolutely. I made more money in this sport as a professional fighter than I've ever made in my life. So I walk a fine line there, right? From being ungrateful, wanting more, or and getting a fair, our fair share, what we deserve, because we're the ones that are putting it on the line. So, I mean, it's a difficult, it's a fine line we walk there.
Yeah, and what I like is, I mean, not the part where it's taken 10 years, but you guys are really making a lot of headway. But that it kind of goes to show your character in terms of you stopped fighting a long time ago, but there you are kind of leading the charge with some of the former athletes, all for the betterment of the sport and the younger athletes, which is exactly what's happened in the other sports. There had to be sacrifices made when they did strike shortened seasons, you know, or whatever. And they did it all for the benefit of a lot of these NBA stars that can make $40 million a year guaranteed. Randy Couture, they can get injured and they still get paid. Now NFL gets the big signing bonus. They don't have guaranteed contracts, or at least not all of it is guaranteed. So, but headway's been moved. Headway's been made in a lot of these sports. And hopefully that also happens in the sport as well. I've said the same thing. The retirement for the fighters is very, very important. I'd like to see that be one of the first things.
Yeah, I mean, we enjoy the protect. Well, boxers enjoy the protections of the Ollie Act from 1996, and they create some transparency in that industry, the boxing industry, to protect fighters from guys like Don King and Bob Arum, who had taken advantage of some of those fighters. And we don't enjoy those protections in mixed martial arts, at least not at this point. If we can change that definition for the Muhammad Ali Act to include all combative sports athletes, that includes those guys that are grappling on pay-per-views now and all these other sports that are growing out of this movement of mixed martial arts, no holds barred, whatever you wanted to call it back then, I think the sport would change. The athletes would get a better deal, a fair shake. And I'll be honest, it's one of the reasons I'm involved with the PFL, and I love the PFL, because this format is a meritocracy. It's not about who talks the best smack or does the best publicity stunts. It's about going out and competing, scoring points, and winning. And they're rewarding good fighting and not good publicity stunts. So it's one of the things I'm happy to be involved with the PFL about, because they're taking care of these fighters. They're paying them as well or better than anybody else. They're getting a crack at $1 million, a new champion each year. I think it's just a really cool format. And I'll be honest, I had my questions about it too in the beginning. But if I was 25 and you were going to offer me five fights in a year and a crack at $1 million, I would be all over that. You know, at 35, maybe not.
Yeah. And the two fights in one night, which I know they're not going to have this year, but they have had in the past and hopefully they'll have next year. That would almost be like a picnic for you, because again, I think that screw loose thing that I was saying, man, you just enjoy these battles. Everyone, George Pierre was telling us the other day, I was frightened, you know, when I was about to fight. And here you are, I think in one of those highlights, you're saying, yeah, I'm ready to have some fun. And you had this look in your eye. I'm like, oh my God, Randy, man, you're a nut. Anyway, hey, thank you so much for stopping by Junkie Radio. We hope to catch up with you so we can preview some other PFL fights coming up this year. April 23rd, it starts off on a Friday, folks, and then they adjust back to their Thursday time slot. We look forward to week one, headlined by Anthony Pettis. Some nice free agents that were signed by the PFL, not only Clarissa Shields, but Rory McDonald and Justin Willis and Anthony Pettis. So lightweights and featherweights are on display, and we look forward to that. And again, thank you for your time, and we're glad that you're 100% healthy now.
Thanks, guys. I always appreciate your support, support of Extreme Couture. You guys are awesome. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, sir. Take care. All right, folks, there you have it. That was Randy Couture, the legend. Man, that ranch is badass. And check out the four-part documentary there on ESPN+. All four episodes are ready to go. And I'm telling you, 5 minutes in, you'll see that it was well done, well produced. Bravo to PFL Studios. You're really, really going to enjoy it. All right, we're going to go from Randy Couture to Myron Malatke. He is the president of XFC. XFC has an event called Young Guns 1 that is taking place on March 27th. And we're going to talk to him about that card. And we'll be right back. Myron Malatke, welcome to MMA Junkie Radio on March 22nd here. It's fight week for you, so I'm sure you're pumped up. Shawnee, Oklahoma is where Young Guns 1 will be taking place. Talk to us about this card, headlined by Smith versus Patterson.
Hey, we're excited. Yeah, like you said, fight week. Always love fight week. So we're getting ready to get launched and taking over Oklahoma City. So the fight card is exactly what you said. It's Young Guns. So that's such a primary part of what we do with XFC. As you probably are aware, we have Young Guns. We have the XFC tournament. We have the super fights. But the Young Guns is really something special to me. This is the opportunity to give these young kids a great platform. It's a development league that we can help them build their career. And just do it the right way. No short notice fights, no fighting out of weight class.
You got 12 fights on Saturday. It's a pro-am card. Well, one thing that stood out to me was there's a huge focus on 145 pounds, 135 pounds, a lot of the lower weight classes. Kind of reminded me of the WEC days back in the day. Is that the way the card kind of worked out, or do you guys really like to focus on some of these lighter weight classes?
Well, we like these weight classes. What we found, especially with our experience in Brazil, you know, these kids come to bang right from the very start. They're not worn out after the first round and leaning on each other or laying on each other. So, you know, the 35s, 45s, 55s, and 70, we've got the 55s and 70s in the tournament right now, but we're definitely building the lower weight classes.
Folks, if you go to xfcmma.net, and you can do that as you follow along here with the interview. There's a link there where tickets are available. So what we know, our fans are going to be allowed, you know, because I'm not sure how every state's doing it, but that's why we have you. You can tell us how Oklahoma's doing it in terms of dealing with the pandemic. But what I did see, Myron Malatke, was some of your sections are already sold out. So it looks like the fans are ready to rock and roll and start getting out there again, kind of like how all of us are after this difficult 2020.
Yeah, you know, spot on. I think everyone's looking forward to getting out of the house and go watch someone hit each other in the face, right? We're excited about it. The Oklahoma Commission's been fantastic to work with. They're great people. They've welcomed us with open arms. It's a big event for Oklahoma, so they're extremely excited. And the fans have responded, too. You know, they've got some great local shows that go on, but this is something really big for Oklahoma City. And like you said, you know, the VIPs were sold out within a couple hours of announcing the show. The premium seats are, I believe, either sold out or really close, and GA is filling up as well.
So I don't know if you were able to catch Randy Couture as he was leaving, but, you know, he has PFL, and they do their season, and, you know, next show we're going to be doing some UFC. They got a big card up. But when it comes to XFC, how would you say you guys stand out?
Well, you know what? I think it starts with our business model. You know, UFC does their thing, Bellator, even PFL for that matter. But what we really look at, we've always been known for our grassroots. You know, we've got the tryouts that we have. We're having them in Oklahoma City on Sunday after the show. We have our Young Guns, which is the development league. We've got the tournament, which is absolutely just wicked. A lot of recognizable names have gone through our tournament there in Brazil. And, of course, our super fights. And super fights right now, you know, they're going to be made up of a lot of free agents. We have Andre Sukumthaw and Guilherme Faria put on a great show. Jessica Aguilar, Danielle Taylor, just to name a few of the fighters that we have. But at the end of the day, when you take a look at the XFC roster, not a feeder league, this is something we're building our roster. And in 2-3 years, you are going to see an absolute wicked, wicked roster.
I actually got caught doing an extra long workout because of one of your cards. I couldn't turn it off, and my body couldn't take much more, so I was going pretty slow at the end, but I didn't want to miss out. I wanted you to talk a little bit about the tryouts. How do those work? Who's invited? Who can show up?
You know, the tryouts are great. We've had one in Michigan at James Gray's gym over there in Brighton, Michigan. We had one in Atlanta as well at Junior Sancio's place. And this one is going to be right in Oklahoma City. You know, the tryouts, we typically see between 300-400 applicants. And we see everything from a kid that, and I've said it before, but one is first bar fight, thinking, okay, he's going to have a career in MMA, all the way through to we have UFC veterans that show up for these tryouts. We narrow it down to about 100 fighters, just to keep a controlled environment and really focus on the type fighters that we're looking for. And this trial put on by Eduardo Duarte, our matchmaker, is unlike any in combat sports. When he gets there, he doesn't care where you've been, what you've done. He's judging the fighters based on what he sees. You know, we've got the pad work, we've got rolling on the ground, we've got some other athletic activities, and then we always open it up for some lively sparring at the end.
What would you say has been the most challenging part about getting the engine going again after this pandemic? The UFC announced that they're going to have a full capacity arena. But prior to that, they didn't want to have anything. But then we see other sports going at 20%, 30%, NCAA, a bubble, you know. So what was kind of the hand that you were dealt?
Well, you know, we really were looking to kick off the relaunch of XFC last summer, back in July. And we really took a look at it. We thought that we could manage the tryouts in a safe environment without really understanding what was going on. Of course, the venues were struggling. Many of them just flat out closed, and of course, no fans. So by the time we got to Atlanta in November, we had our protocols in place. And, you know, number one, keeping the fighters, the corners, XFC staff, the production team, everyone safe, and then seeing what we could work out with the fans as well. And we had some limited fans in Atlanta, but, you know, you're talking, about 400 fans were allowed in with social distancing. So, you know, the way that we have it worked out, fighters coming in with a COVID test in hand, coming in, taking the COVID test again when they get their physicals, making sure everyone's clean and ready and clear to go, and just creating that environment. So the biggest challenge really is just trying to navigate what's going on, just like every business in the world right now. We want to move forward. We're anxious. We're excited. We've got big plans to move forward, but we're trying to do it intelligently as well.
How many fight cards do you anticipate having in 2021?
Well, we're going to have 12. Six would be our numbered event, which are our big events, but we're also going to have another 6 Young Guns events. We want to keep these kids busy. We want to, you know, iron sharpens iron is, you know, our protocol with that, and want to make sure that we keep these kids active, make sure, you know, they're not choosing specific fights. We're bringing the kids in. We're providing the matchups, making sure that they're the right matchups for XFC.
And lastly, I apologize for not knowing this, but I was looking and I want to make sure. I know the big series is on TV, like Ghost said, we've seen it. Will Young Guns be streamed or on television or anywhere where we can watch here in Vegas?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be all over the place. You know, I'm going to break it with you guys. I haven't had a chance to get it out. No press release until probably tomorrow. But we just signed up with Fox Deportes. They came after us hard and excited, and we just feel they're going to be a great partner. We're also going to be on Fight TV, and we're going to have broadcasts all throughout Latin America, very heavy in Mexico. We're also in Europe. XFC will be the first MMA event shown live in France. We just signed up with Fight Nation there, so they're excited to have us. And probably the most important announcement, XFCTV.com. Fans will be able to go watch XFC 24/7, and we're really going to drive them that way. You can pick up all the latest news, all the backstories, everything, even the X-Girl contest that we had in Brazil is going to be shown on there. A lot of previous content.
Well, thank you for breaking that on our show. And that's tremendous. I mean, you just named off some big powerhouses in our sport. Fight TV, man, they have a lot of great content. But Fox Deportes, I catch that a lot because Goz and I are also soccer fans. So congratulations, Myron, on all that. And we look forward to Young Guns 1 March 27th. Like Goz said, we did enjoy that other event we were talking about with Andre Sukumta and Jessica Aguilar, and we want to wish you the best of success after a difficult 2020. We want to wish you the best of success in 2021, and hopefully we can preview some of those upcoming cards with you as well here on the show.
Well, guys, I really appreciate the time to talk. Thanks so much for the support. Make sure you tune in. We've got huge expectations with all these kids coming in for this coming Saturday.
Definitely. And don't forget, folks, you out there in Oklahoma, they are having fans and tickets are selling, so go to xfcmma.net and check it out, and that'll be your link to tickets there if you want to catch the show live. Thank you so much, Myron, for joining us here on Junkie Radio. We'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks.
All right, we'll see you. Well, that's cool. I mean, yeah. You don't have to surf many channels to see MMA. Like, it's just popping everywhere, you know what I mean? So that means there's a lot of demand for it, and that's good for the sport, and it's good for all of these different fighters that are looking to compete.
And they got some young talent too. Remember, what was his name? Kenny Cross, right? I think he just had a kind of a bad injury, but he was fun, man. He was fun to have on the show and watch him perform. So it was a good card last time.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Definitely want to give a shout out to Ed Kapp for lining that up. And of course, Greg Savage from the PFL for lining up Randy Couture. One more time for Randy's series. It's available right now on ESPN Plus. If you want to check it out, all four episodes, you can binge watch them if you want. And it's, you know, I definitely don't want to take heat for this, but I'm telling you, as you see it, it kind of looks goes on par to what they tried to do with Michael Jordan in that 6-part series, you know, that was epic, you know, in 2020. I forget the official name of the Jordan one, but wasn't just some videographer following him around. No disrespect to what those guys do, because they create great content as well. But I'm saying, like, it looked like they really, really unpacked his whole story. So it's going to be great. And I may just knock it all out today, too.
Yeah, no, it's really, really cool. I want to play with them goats, man. I hope them goats come to Vegas. They look cool. But the ranch was dope. And like I said, man, we've known Randy a long time, George. I'm serious. We spent half of our life covering him. And I just kept, like, seeing things. I've read his book. I keep seeing things that I just didn't know. And his mom was saying some pretty funny stuff and his buddies and all that. And I was like, man, this is so worth the time. I think each episode is like 22 minutes or something like that.
Very cool. Yeah, I like that idea of the goat being the mascot. You never know. You never know. And I can't wait to have him back on, too, to find out what movie he was making. We didn't get a chance to ask him, but we'll hopefully catch up with him. His ranch is beautiful down there in Arizona, so I'm happy for him. Folks, obviously we'll be here on Thursday as well, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, as we always do here on Sportscaster. But I also want to tell you that on Saturday, Goz and I are hosting a watch-along for UFC 260, headlined by Stipe Miocic versus Francis Ngannou. Unfortunately, and we didn't get to all the news, Alexander Volkanovski will not be competing versus Brian Ortega, so there won't be two title fights, but there'll still be the big heavyweight tilt. Apparently, Volkanovski tested positive for COVID. He said he had many negative tests, but he popped once for a positive, and that's all it took. It doesn't sound like anything that's going to set them back too much, so I think that fight, you'll see it pretty soon, sooner rather than later, I should say. But you never know, and let's give it a few days to see how the athletes are. Brian Ortega, very classy in his post, wants the guy to get better. The next pay-per-view after that would be UFC 261, which already has three title fights. Could we handle four? I don't know. Would they just put it on a fight night? I don't know. Maybe an ABC show or something like that. That would be pretty cool to give that channel, you know, that type of a pop. Or maybe they push it into another show like the one that's going to be with Figueredo and Marino, I think, is in June, or I don't know. May has a show coming up as well. So I just don't want to delay that much, because I really, really want to watch that fight. But unfortunately, it won't be going down on Saturday. But the watch-along is still going down on Saturday.
Hell yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. We have a little bit of almost a different setup. But I'm going to it's going to be a lot of fun. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Well, the setup, we'll have to have the dual TVs so we can have some XFC on one screen and some UFC on the other screen. And I want to see if there are going to be any odds offered for the pro fights in XFC. You know, I'm starting to have a lot of fun, a lot more fun betting these fights than I was probably about a year ago. There's more props that are available. So rather than just, hey, who's going to win? You know, like Goz and I often talk about the first 20, first to 10 bets you can make on an NCAA game, where you don't have to sweat the whole game and it all comes down to two free throws. Sometimes you can get an early taste of that in first to 10, first to 15, first to 20, whatever the local book is doing. I just realized, Goz, I drank 5 straight days. I'm horrific right now. The guys came out for St. Patrick's Day on Wednesday. There were no basketball games that day. Thursday, they had the writing games. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, each time there was some drinking going on. I started to taper off, but, you know, I hadn't drank much in the last year or so. And then for Lent, I gave up beer, so I was doing a lot of whiskey. Holy cow, man.
But that sounds brutal.
It was good to get out and be back in our home studio there at Mandalay Bay.
Believe it or not, though, I bet you it's not the alcohol. It's the lack of rest. Lack of rest just does you in, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also was working on Bellator rankings. So Bellator is going to unveil their rankings soon. And so I'm part of the group there. You know, I'm one of the members or one of their committee that comprises, you know, and we all vote on the fighters from 1 to 10 champion, and then 1 to 10 in the different weight classes that they have. So I was putting some time in with that over the weekend as well. And I'm looking forward to them debuting it. And then obviously once some of these fighters, like the free agents, start fighting, we can then assign them to their proper weight classes. So that's cool. And but it was a busy weekend with MMA and college basketball. Dare I say, it almost might be too much. If you live bet MMA, college hoops, and you do first to 20 and everything else that's going on while drinking and having fun with friends, your head's spinning, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. I'm going to get some food, and I'm going to watch the Randy Couture story on ESPN Plus. Folks, enjoy your day. We'll see you all on Thursday. And don't forget, on Saturday, the watch-along, we'll see you all then as well. Go out there and be a champion.